Obviously, it's the start of the school year, and we gave a nice shout out to our bus drivers a little bit ago. And, you know, this public school systems, we know there was a lot of budget issues in a lot of our towns as federal money from COVID basically was done. And it was supposed to be more for like one time things, but there's a lot of programs that were built up that are considered necessary. And so a lot of tough decisions. And, you know, on an annual basis, CEA, of course, Connecticut Education Association, they ask their teachers how they're doing and what's on their minds. And that survey gives us a lot of insight into what's happening. And Kate Diaz from CEA joining us here on Brian and Company. Kate, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Brian. I'm good. It's back to school time, so always something to do.
Listen, my wife's in education. She's basically like, I'll talk to you in October. You know, I mean, that's basically how it goes. And so I know the drill at the beginning. It's just, you know, drinking from a fire hose, as they say. So this back to school survey, you know, that always makes news. Just for people listening who haven't read or heard about it, you know, what are some of the biggest takeaways for you?
So the biggest takeaway is that our teachers are really concerned about the stress and the burnout and whether or not, you know, their work is sustainable and we've built jobs they can actually be successful at. And you couple that with their growing concerns about mental health and where our students are at and how we're supporting them and, you know, kind of managing the mental health concerns of our children. I think you pair those together and we have teachers who are, you know, excited to start the school year but nervous about what it takes to get through the school year.
Now, is that any different than last year, though?
So it's interesting. I think we're starting to see that the numbers and the concern about the working conditions are driving harder than the issues about finances. Those come in number two right now. So, you know,
That's a recent flip-flop. So now they're more concerned about, you know, the kids' behavior and the stress and all that other stuff, even more than the fact that they're grossly underpaid.
Yes. And that's kind of the interesting flip-flop is that transition to really looking at how manageable the job is and the concerns about kids and making sure that we're building a school climate. And you're starting to see that if you look at the cell phone policies that have really kind of expanded across the state, that's really dipping into that notion of what kind of school climate and environment are we building and are we doing it in a way that kids can be successful and teachers can be successful. And so I think that's been just sort of a general shift of interest in saying, where can we build in these spaces to build success?
Yeah. I mean, listen, they're asked to do so much more than ever. And I think it's true. I'm curious. I mean, it's on my list of questions. So since you brought it up, I mean, where do you stand on the cell phone policy? And I can give you some of my hot take in a second. But I mean, how do you feel about it? Does it go far enough? Is it too much? What's your stance?
So, yeah, our stance is actually that we support a pretty restrictive policy, and that's evolved over probably the last few years based on research. And we're not really in favor of a statewide ban per se. We really do want communities to engage in this conversation, make the decision that they can all enforce. Because the biggest problem with any policy is if you're not willing to enforce it, don't set it.
Right.
And so that's why we're really in favor of community-based policies that bring the stakeholders to the table. But you will hear our educators talking about highly restrictive policies, mainly because we find that the devices are highly intrusive to the educational process. You know, they're not just phones. They're not text and, you know, talk. They are the entire world gets to influence and intrude into your classroom.
Right.
And so I think we're seeing a much stronger stance among our educators that the more restrictive the policy, we're willing to double down and help enforce those because we do see productive, meaningful change for our kiddos when we do that work.
Right. And listen, with institutional support, it's a lot easier for teachers to say,
right,
okay, everyone put the phone on my desk and grab it when you leave or what have you. I don't, you know, whether it's or yonder pouches, do it in the morning and get it back, you know, toward the end of the school day. My concern, and I've heard from some educators that are friends of the show, is that the phone is one thing, but the computer and laptop do a lot of the same stuff. So are we not looking at this holistically enough?
Well, I think it's an evolution. And I think one of the reasons that we target the cell phone first is because it's honestly the smallest device, right? If a student can kind of slide a phone under a desk and, you know, can be a little bit covert with that, it's harder to do that with a laptop or, you know, one of the, like an iPad or something, or a Chromebook. And so there's the belief that we can control the larger devices differently. You know, we can be more manageable with those because they're harder to kind of covertly, you're not going to be on your laptop walking in the hallways or things like that.
No, but you can be messaging other kids. I'm not on Snapchat, but you can also do other social media when you're on your laptop because the teacher can't see what you're doing. You know, like, I just think there are functionalities that the phone has that the computer also has. I just was bringing it up.
For sure. No, you're not wrong. And so, you know, these are things we've been trying to navigate. And there are actually teacher devices and teacher apps that allow you to see what students are doing in your classroom. This was sort of an advent during COVID. We recognized we had to have the capacity to monitor activity in our classrooms more kind of astutely. And so there are things that we can do as teachers to kind of monitor the activities. It's not a foolproof thing. Yeah. And so anytime, you know, we do that, but we haven't felt the same level of kind of intrusion because we feel like there's been more ability to manage the access to the computer during the classroom. But you're not wrong. It allows them the same access. So, you know, when we talk about the devices in terms of bullying and those types of things, a computer does the same job. Yeah. And so we have to be equally aware.
Yeah, and I want to move on to something else because we don't have a lot of time, but I'll say also, you know, for me, it's the whole day part because I feel like the class is easier to control than the hallways and the cafeteria, and I'd like to see the kids not have phones to hide behind when they should be talking to people, making eye contact and other stuff. But that's just sort of like, you know, my stand.
That's worked.
Yeah.
That's worked in the schools that have been doing it. That's been working.
KTS, president of the CEA, joining us here on Brian and Company. You know, we've had this conversation, you know, for a few minutes. We haven't talked about staffing. You know, it was a huge issue the last couple of years. Are we in better shape?
No. We continue to struggle to fully staff. What we're seeing is a lot of movement between districts. And so there are some spaces that we'll see fully staffed and then others that are opening school still 30, 40 positions vacant. We did see a retraction in staff. So in some cases, you'll be opening school fully staffed, but down 4 or 5 teachers from the previous year.
Right.
And so I would not say, you know, I still have the grave concern that we're not producing enough educators to replace even those that retire. And, you know, in our most recent survey, about 50% of our people said they're thinking about leaving the profession before normal retirement. So that means that our replacement rate has to increase. We have to be able to produce enough educators to go into the workforce to replace the people who are leaving it. And if we accelerate the people leaving it, we have to accelerate the people going into it.
Right.
So it means we've got to talk about recruitment, retention, and making the job highly desirable.
Yep, that's exactly right. And pay is a huge part of that, obviously, although if you are a career teacher, it's one of the few things left that can get a pretty good pension. Kay, we got to run. Best of luck with the start of school, and thank you so much for the time.
Thanks, Brian. Anytime.